Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, one and all, and welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio, a very special edition tonight. Yes, it's not Sunday, don't panic, it's Monday, and it's opening day of the George Zimmerman trial. Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the brand new format Web Sleuths. It's the Web Sleuths Weather Forum. Do you like to talk about the weather, follow the weather, dress in leather, and look at the weather? If you do, go to www.websleuths.com/forums. Scroll down until you see our up-to-the-minute forum. Click on that, and it'll get you right to the weather forum. First day of the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Now, we finally opened a thread on Web Sleuths for discussion concerning the shooting of Trayvon Martin and the trial of Zimmerman. We had to close it down because everybody was trying to kill each other with words when we had it open. It was unbelievable. So we're trying it. Hats off to Rain1212. She is in there really doing a huge amount of work, making sure that our members don't explode all over each other. And so far, we made it through one day, and it's looking good. But let's talk about the trial. Opening day today, and it was very, very interesting and a little bizarre, to say the least. With me is our good friend Cheryl McCollum of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And Cheryl, I'm just going to turn it over to you. First of all, we had the F-bomb dropped within a few moments, and then we had a knock-knock yeah. joke. Hello? Let's talk about that. What did you think of the prosecution's opening statements and then the defense?
I thought the prosecution was outstanding. I thought that he laid it out beautifully. He was passionate. He was concerned. He quoted George, and he quoted him, I think, correctly and in the correct manner. If anybody was offended, they should have been. If they weren't, then that's good. They were taking notes and paying attention. I mean, either way, it was the right decision. If you remember the opening statements, even from our students, they mentioned that. He mm-hmm. said it. It's important that he said it, when he chose to say it, and who he chose to say that to. He knew he was being recorded. He knew this was someone associated with the police department. And so it matters. It's going to matter to the jury. It certainly matters to Trayvon's family. The defense, I was astonished. I was literally dumbfounded. I have never in my life seen such a ill-conceived play in my life.
The knock-knock joke.
You, oh, my God. Even when you say it, it just makes me cringe. And the thing is, you're talking about a 17-year-old that lost his life and another man fighting for his freedom. There's nothing funny about it. Because the reality is everybody loses here, Tricia. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no victory. If Mr. Zimmerman goes to prison, Miss Fulton is not going to be happy. She's not. She's already
right.
gotten a judgment from the Homeowners Association. What do you buy with it? Anything you would possibly buy with it would just disgust you. So if that man goes to prison, every day that he's in prison, she does not have her child. There's
right.
no victory there. If he doesn't go to prison, there's no victory there either. Everybody loses here. It's just horrible. So to me, to open with a knock-knock joke was classless. It was asinine, is all I can tell you. And you had Dr. Jefferson on your show. Do you think for a moment one of our students could have pulled that stunt on your show?
Oh, hell no. You would have,
oh,
I mean, I can just see, you would have kicked them out of the classroom. It would have been over, over.
I might have had to pull Sherry Jefferson off of them. So I'm just telling you, you know, we relied on them to be, you know, passionate about it, just like I won't. Folks in your chat room to be passionate and to be opinionated, but to do something so careless without any true feeling about who's sitting in that courtroom. Trayvon's mama was right there. His daddy was right there. Nobody's going to think that's funny. And frankly, I didn't see George laughing either. And I have to think, on some level, dude, really? My very freedom is in your hands, and that's how you're starting.
Well, I First of all, George looked like he was drugged or something, or he'd been up all night. He looked like kind of I did when I used to was young enough to stay up all night, and I used to have fun.
Sure.
He kind of looked like that, but he was bloated. Maybe this is how he normally is, but please go ahead.
No, he very well may have been up all night. Can you imagine?
Yes, absolutely.
He did. He looked several times like he was falling asleep, and he just wanted to shut his eyes, but. You know, who knows how people react to stress, and that's something that you and I have talked about before when it comes to George Zimmerman and whether or not we put him on the stand and that big debate.
Mm-hmm.
George is not the brightest bulb, Tricia.
Oh, yes,
and
we know that.
To me, it's a big, big gamble if you put him on that stand.
Well, I think they've got to do something dramatic after the knock-knock joke, don't you? I mean, and if they don't hear from him...
I think they will. I think that, again, I don't know what his thought process was. You know, we're going to kind of shake the nerves off. I don't know what he was doing. I've never seen it. I've seen plenty of stunts. I've seen plenty of theatrics. I've seen plenty of just jaw-dropping tactics. But I've never seen that in a case this emotionally charged on both sides. I mean, your chat room is pretty indicative of what's going on out there. So I'm just telling you, I don't think anyone is going to look back and go, man, that was the right decision. Tomorrow when I go to court, I'm going to start with a knock-knock joke myself.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, ridiculous.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And do you know anything about this defense attorney at all?
The one that did the opening? Nothing. Nothing.
Well, now we know. You know what? That is going to be hooked onto his career, his obituary at some point in his life. He is the one who made the ill-timed knock-knock joke during the George Zimmerman trial. We have Cheryl McCollum.
I can't even believe. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
I was going to say, I can't even believe O'Mara would sign off on that and go, yeah, lead with that. That's good. Get everybody relaxed. It's just ridiculous.
I wonder if he even told anybody, because that does seem like something that somebody would throw themselves in front of a, that's like a train coming, they throw their body in front of it to protect them. Like, don't do that. That is the worst thing you can do. We have Cheryl McCollum here. You've seen her a lot on Nancy Grace, all over the talk shows. She is a legal analyst and also one of the professors at the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We've had her students on here before. We had a very interesting show where they presented their opening statements. And their opening statements, I think, were better than the defense's opening statements. That's for sure. Your students, anyway. Have you talked to any of your students? Were you in class when this was happening? Or what is their opinion?
We've been trading emails and text messages. And, yeah, several of them. It's been a good experience for them because they do feel pretty good about what they did. I think the greatest victory that they feel like they have is they also pointed out that Trayvon did not have George Zimmerman's blood on his hands. Remember that?
That's right.
And we talked about that if he were smothering him and covering his nose and mouth, then he would have had the blood. And there was no blood. And I thought that the prosecutor laid that out beautifully, that it was not on his palms, it wasn't under his nails, it wasn't on his sleeve. I thought he did a great job there. And, of course, the defense is going to come back and say that's because he was in the rain. But that doesn't negate why it wouldn't be on his sleeve. That would have still seeped in. But, you know, it's still going to be a he said, she said, you know, look left, look right. Everybody,
right.
They're just going to keep arguing. I mean, that's just what it's going to be.
Absolutely. We do have a question from the chat room. What is your opinion of Trayvon's mom leaving during the 911 call? I thought that was absolutely fine. And I saw people really upset, like they thought it was some sort of planned thing, the drama. And I don't think so at all. I wouldn't want to hear that 911 call with the gunshot. And, oh, my God,
right.
No, thank you.
She's heard it enough. And the thing is, I don't think that's a stunt. I mean, from what I've seen from Ms. Fulton, and I've been very vocal about this, I am amazed at her candor. I'm amazed at how she is a calming person in this storm. She has basically called for everybody to let the justice system do its job. They could be very different here, Tricia. Let's just tell it like it is.
Okay.
They could be stirring it up, and they could be, you know, causing more of a rift, and they could basically be just sounding the alarm, you know, for people to, you know, revenge and fight and hate, and they're doing the exact opposite.
And that's
the
amazing.
Reality is,
yes,
they've lost the most.
Yes, and it would be very easy for them to get on there and be hateful and stir up those type of emotions that we do not need, and they haven't.
And
I'll tell you, if it was my son, I don't know if I could be that big.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I would only pray I could be that gracious, but I'm telling you, I think I would be hating somebody, and I'd want every building in this world to be on fire.
Right.
You know, because, again, George may lose his freedom. That is nothing compared to the life of a 17-year-old.
That's the truth. There is no comparison. Now, were you actually in court today? Were you able to get in, or where are you in this courtroom?
No, I was not in there this week. My plan is to be back there in a week and a half. So
fantastic.
That'll be my plan to be. Yep.
That's going to be great when you're right there on the scene, and then you can report back all the nuances of things that we don't normally get to see that network TV won't report, but that we love. Cheryl, remember, you can say anything on this show. There are no censors, none whatsoever. We like it coming out free and clear with absolutely no problem. Okay, now let's talk a little bit first about the first witness that the prosecution called. Unfortunately, I missed a little bit of that. Why don't you update us on who that was and why it was important for him to be the first witness?
Well, I think it's important that they laid the foundation that, okay, this is what was happening that night.
And
why
who was
would
the first
he go
witness?
Get ice?
It was, well,
the,
it was
the
a...
The son of the fiancé?
Yes, I believe
is that
so,
what you're
right, okay.
Yes,
yes. Yes.
And this is why he went to 7-Eleven. He bought the Skittles for the son of Mr. Martin's fiancé.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he, I think, did a really good job just to say, look, you know, we were going to watch the game. And I didn't even find out that he had died till the next day when I got home from school. And so I think that just paints a picture that, you know, he was 17. He was almost 18. He was kind of doing his own thing, but he was still, you know, kind to the little kid. And you know what I mean? Just
right.
A typical 17-year-old guy. And he was hanging outside maybe a little bit longer talking to the girlfriend. And we talked about that on your show. You know, maybe he wants to stand outside for some privacy. So the rain wasn't a factor to Trayvon.
And that's just it. You have to,
might have been
right.
A factor.
And that's just it. Think about it when you were 17 and your dad and people were around, you didn't want them listening. And even if you went to your bedroom, they could still listen. It's very simple. Rain would not deter anybody that's in love. If they wanted to talk to their girlfriend, that very, very easily could have been why he was standing there. The defense is going to paint a totally different picture. Now, Cheryl, what will the defense be allowed to say about Trayvon?
I think what they're going to do is they're going to kind of leave the question there for you to answer in your mind. So they're going to say, he leaves 7-Eleven at 6:30. It's a 15-minute walk home. In other words, he went home at 6:45. Why not? Why is he standing there for 20 minutes? So, again, you can draw that conclusion yourself. And just like, you know, we theorized yesterday, they're going to play the tapes. They're going to play them. They're going to dissect them. And the prosecution is going to tell you this is where George is lying. And the defense is going to say he was telling the truth. There's two sides. So, again, you know, we talked on your show a while back about Trayvon's arms being under him and him being face down. Mm-hmm. How can that happen if George says he continued to struggle? It doesn't appear that he was struggling at all.
Mm-hmm.
It appears he was shot, grabbed his chest and fell.
And fell.
That's it. And he wasn't moved until the first responders, which is another thing. And I appreciate you bringing this out again. And I think the prosecution did a marvelous job tonight, or today rather, about showing, okay, everybody wants to say what a racist police department this is. That officer dropped to his knees and put his mouth on that child trying to save him.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like a racist to me.
No.
So again, I think that part of the truth needs to come out. It's easy to say they didn't arrest him for 45 days, so they're all racist. There's more to it. They wanted probable cause. Sometimes the right decision is to wait until you've got him dead to right and go get him. He wasn't going anywhere. There's
mm-hmm.
nowhere George Zimmerman could go now.
Well, that's the truth.
Where he couldn't be found immediately. He's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, letting the system do the job, I think, again, to paraphrase Ms. Fulton, is the right decision.
Exactly. And that you're absolutely right in everything that you're saying. We're in 100% agreement on that. As far as the prosecution goes, how do you have any idea how long they're going to take to present their case? I'm envisioning Jodi Arias type of things. However, Cheryl McCollum of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, I love this judge in the Zimmerman case. She takes no crap.
Yeah.
It is 0-0 crap done, and you can't
right.
mess around with her. So I, at first I thought, no, it's going to be another Jodi Arias, but I don't think she'll let it go on that long. How long do you think the prosecution will take to put their case on?
Well, it's not going to go that long at all. First of all, she wouldn't allow George Zimmerman to be on the stand for 11 days or whatever that insanity was.
Mm-hmm.
They only have 17 witnesses. I don't think they're going to call all of them. I think they're going to call the ones that best represent what occurred, who saw it, who heard it, who has never changed their story, and who can outline it the best. One of the best, to me, pieces of evidence that both sides have is the cell phones and the 911 calls, because
mm-hmm.
that pinpoints real time. And it's like, again, we've outlined on your show before, you're talking about a very small window when something goes terribly wrong. So what they're going to hammer is that none of this would have occurred if George had stayed in his car or immediately gone back to his car, which he did not do.
Mm-hmm.
And only George is going to be able to clear that up. And I think that's what the jury's going to be looking at. Did
so what
he
can
retreat?
Right. What is the defense going to say, though? Is the defense going to say he was on his way back and he was attacked? Is that how they're going to put it?
No, the defense is going to try to say, again, they're going to say the 911 operator kept asking him for an address. He was looking for
oh,
an address
right.
because
mm-hmm.
the operator kept asking for it. And they're going to
so
play that
was...
tape over and over and over where the operator says, where are you now? What's the address there? Well, what's the side street? Well, he's trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
and so
trying
he's...
to tell them the best that he can.
Right. So he's in his story, and again, we don't know what the truth is, and that's what's so frustrating, but in George Zimmerman's story,
right.
the 911 operator is saying, hey, what's the address? And he's like, well, here, I got to walk and find one. I got to go find it. I got to, you know, so he's going to say he's walking around. The prosecution's going to say, uh-uh. He's just trying to follow Trayvon because he wants to be, you know, the big cop on campus, even though he's not a cop.
Right.
And that's where it all went wrong. Do we know the racial makeup of the jurors?
Yes, they're 5 white, 1 African-American.
Interesting. And it is interesting. Why only 6? I thought they'd have to have 12.
Not in Florida, unless it's a capital murder case. They'll use 6.
Really? That I had
mm-hmm.
no idea. So in anything, unless it's capital murder, they can use up to 12, though, right?
In Florida, not unless it's a capital case.
Okay, got it.
If
got it.
Not, they only use 6.
Okay. And how old are these women? Do we know their ages?
We do. We do. I mean, it's like 36, 39, 24. I mean, there's like different ages. It's a pretty broad range in that respect. I think one is retired with grown children. One is mid-30s with fairly young, you know, children. One is straight out of college. So we know the makeup. And again, of the six, three are gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
we have, you know,
interesting as well.
I'm sorry, three are grandmothers, did you say?
Gun owners.
Oh, gun owners. I thought you said grandmothers. Oh, well, now that is
no.
very interesting. Hold on.
Yeah,
we have a question. We have a question. Let's go to our phone call, area code 952. You're on the air with Cheryl McCollum.
Hi, Tricia and Cheryl. It's Michael in Minnesota.
Michael in Minnesota, one of my most favorite people in the whole wide world. How are you, my darling?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tricia. Hi, Cheryl.
Hey, how are you, Michael?
Well, I'm fine, but I'm really disturbed by the jury of Zimmerman's supposed peers. How in the world can six women with that vast age difference be considered a jury of his peers? This makes no sense to me.
It doesn't, unless you understand the broader definition of what the legal system means by peers.
Please
explain. If you are a Hell's Angel, you don't get 12 bikers as your jury. what they consider your peer is other people from your community. Like a coworker would be my peer, even though she may be Hispanic and 21. Michael, I'm nowhere near 21. So, but in the workplace, she would be considered my peer. So that's what they're saying. It's a broader, very loose definition. It's not literally people that have walked in your shoes. So, you know, it's not if you're Hispanic, it's going to be, you know, majority Hispanic. If you're a male, it's going to be male. But I will tell you, I'm stunned by the jury. I'm stunned by the not joke. I'm stunned by, you know, not allowing, you know, certain things about Trayvon's past and not allowing certain things about the, you know, voice recognition. So this case, again, I mean, it's going to be one for the books. It's going to be one that they absolutely study in law schools, and it's going to be one that allows prosecutors to go back and look at how they, you know, put cases together, as well as law enforcement.
Well, I really don't understand the judge's rulings on many of these things, because my thoughts are, if a person, even in the Arias case we see, that's considered too prejudicial. You hear that all the time about all this evidence.
Right.
And if you have things in your past that go to your character, then that is relevant. If you have nothing in your past, then there's no, you know, I don't know. Character is an issue, and I don't understand these judges' rulings. It seems like the jurors who have to make these horrible decisions aren't getting all the facts to make them with. I just don't think that's right.
Well, Michael, you're preaching to the choir, and I'm one of those folks when they say, well, you can't show the picture of Nicole Brown Simpson with her head cut off because it's just too disturbing. Well, dadgummit, that's what happened.
Exactly.
Show them what happened so they understand it. Don't put the black box across her throat and say, okay, she was murdered. Show me, tell me, so that I can make, you know, the right decision. I agree with you. So I'm a purist in that way. I think if you're going to go after the truth, then you need all the facts that are available. Now, with that said, I do think there are times, for example, where you might need to hold off making something the biggest part of the trial. So let's talk about Trayvon being suspended. George didn't know that. He had no way of knowing that.
Right.
So that did not factor into him calling 911 and finding him suspicious. That was just icing on the cake after the fact.
But
so
past acts of violence are certainly relevant. If he had a propensity
to
fight, which they said the texts proved.
Right. They could.
And I'm not defending George Zimmerman, and I hope I'm not coming off like that. But it doesn't seem like he's getting a fair trial here.
Right. What my issue, again, is if we're not going to allow anything in about Trayvon, we shouldn't allow it about George.
Exactly.
And so if you're going to bring up his past with domestic violence and speeding or whatever else they want to talk about, then it needs to be brought up. So, again, the jury has not been living in a bubble. So when they say, well, he didn't live there, why was he there? Wasn't school in session? It was February. Juries are not stupid. And at least one person of that six has heard he was suspended. And he was with his dad because of that. There's no way somebody doesn't have that knowledge. So, again, they're going to float these questions past. And it could be as simple as the one, son of the fiancé already said, I didn't find out he was killed until I got home from school. Oh, yeah, school's in session. Why wasn't Trayvon in school? See? So they already know he wasn't reported missing till the next day. Why wouldn't his dad look for him? Why in the world would he not look, in the backyard and see crime scene tape? Why would a neighbor not come over and go, oh, my gosh, you know,
honey,
that's
what I don't
young
get.
Guy staying with you.
Yeah,
but again, it goes toward what the jury is going to infer. Because if you say to me, no one went over to her house, does she have no friends there? Does everybody kind of keep to themselves? Because that's certainly it in the picture that George paints.
Mm-hmm.
He knows, Frank Taffy. He knows the president of the Homeowners Association. They unanimously vote him in, so he's well known. But nobody went to her and said, hey, the young fella that was staying with you for 3 or 4 days, an ambulance came and got him. But again, you get home from dinner at 10:30, you don't check on him. If he's not there, you assume he goes to a movie. But then the next morning...
Do we know how large the neighborhood was that George was head of this citizen patrol or whatever you call it, the Crime Stoppers or
citizen
watch group?
Yeah, neighborhood watch. It's here's another thing that's going to be an issue, Michael. I'm glad you brought that up. Guess who
Michael,
trained George?
I love you. Keep going. I'm just going to let you ask questions.
Watch.
It's great.
And this, if this doesn't come out, I'm going to be a little disappointed. But the police department came out and trained him.
They did?
Yes, ma'am. They came out.
How many blocks did the neighborhood? How many blocks did the neighborhood? My point is, I find it suspicious. If I was part of a neighborhood watch group, I live in a townhome community, so it's not that large. But I would have no trouble describing where I am if I'm in my own neighborhood. I thought that seemed kind of odd when they were saying, where are you? I don't know. Isn't it your neighborhood? How can you not know?
They were asking for an address. And here's the weird thing. I've walked this neighborhood. The buildings are numbered a little different. So he's renting. George doesn't own it, but he does rent there. So when you go two streets over, he didn't know those numbers to give her, I'm behind 734, I'm behind 1261. He didn't know the number, is what he claims. When Trayvon took off running, which George said he ran, and Dee Dee, the girlfriend, they used to call her Dee Dee, said Trayvon was running, so that's pretty clear that he ran at one point. Where he ran, Michael, was down this sidewalk, if you will, but the sidewalk is in between two units, and both the units, the back of them, face the sidewalk. So if George was there, he couldn't see the number, the address, because he was in the back of two units. So the unit on the left and the unit on the right, the back porches face where George was standing.
Oh, I see.
So he would have to walk all the way around to get a number. And just to be quite honest, I've lived in the same neighborhood for 20 years. I've got some really, really good friends in here. I don't know that I know their street number.
I don't know street numbers, but I could certainly say I'm one block off of whatever,
what he was trying to say. He kept trying to say, come back to the clubhouse, go back to where the pool is. Because the way this place is laid out, it's like a semicircle, and then a half moon, and then another semicircle. It's really unusual. The layout is you remember like the show Knots Landing?
Yeah.
Had like that weird aerial view. It's like that. Like everything connects. It's really, really unusual. Like each unit, you can clearly walk in between. Because I know when I was there, the thing that shocked me the most and bothered me, frankly, was he so easily could have been home 9 different ways.
Exactly.
Now,
if he
wasn't just from there, if he had just gone home. And I think as a mother, that would literally wake me up in the night that he left at 6:30, he could have been home by 6:45, and George would have never seen him, you know. And that just eats at you. It has to.
Now, do we know what the crime rate in that neighborhood was? Had there been a lot of crimes? Was George Zimmerman heightened at the fact there had been so many break-ins or something in that area? Or
yes, the crime rate is not without merit. I mean, it's there. And the other thing is, if you pull the 911 calls from maybe a 5-mile radius, they're astounding. So it's not just George. People readily call. And my son even pointed out the sign, and it says, "We report any suspicious activity, neighborhood watch." Well, I think George took that literally, because he called about dogs, he called about garage doors, he called about people weaving in and out of traffic, he called about people walking, he called about people playing in the pool too late. Anything that he felt fell into that category, he surely called.
Cheryl, could the defense bring that up and say, okay, look, you're complaining about George calling this many times. Well, we have Citizen X calling this many times and Citizen Y calling this many times in the same area. It's just what they do. Is that something the defense could portray as being correct?
Oh, absolutely. If they said, look, yes, George called, you know, and I don't know the exact number, 72
times. I think 44.
Okay,
in his
entire reign, but let's say 44.
Okay.
He called 44 times, but in 2 years, there's been 963 phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about the dynamic of the neighborhood, the racial makeup is not at all what's been portrayed. Even if you watch George, his video when he's walking the detective through the scene, there's several African-American females walking around. George doesn't even pay attention to them. He knows them. He's seen them. The makeup of the neighborhood is about a third Caucasian, a third African-American, a third Hispanic. It's very well-diverse neighborhood. It is not at all this gated community, all white, upper middle class, not at all.
We do have a question from the chat room that I would like to bring up to you, Cheryl. I think this is interesting.
Okay.
Do you know if Frank, that's George's friend and neighbor, is he going to testify or not? I'm not sure. I don't know. Do we know that yet?
Frank Taffy?
Yes.
Frank. Okay.
Frank Taffy
is probably dying to testify.
Okay.
Frank Taffy loves to tell his side, his story, his version. I think the defense better be ready to try to keep Frank on task.
Uh-huh. Right.
Because you cannot say, I mean, Tricia, I adore you, I respect you, but I cannot testify to what your home life is like. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say, well, I know absolutely that Tricia would never have a drop of alcohol. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Tricia would never use profanity. I don't know that. But I can say I've only known her to be kind and wonderful and professional to me. That I can say. Frank Taffy, honey, you would think he was right there the day it happened. He was nowhere around.
Right.
So Frank is one of these, hey, this is my chance, you know, to get my 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So Frank is probably looking forward to his moment in the spotlight and on TV again.
Well, and that will be a very interesting day, because he is a character. I think he'll do good for George. I really do, but I just think he's a
he will,
a character.
But he could also blow up in his face, because if I were the prosecution, Mr. Taffy, were you home on this February evening? No, I wasn't. Thank you. Nothing further.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't there. You don't
End
know.
End of story. End of story. Exactly.
End of story.
I, Right, right. I see what you're saying.
I'm saying the reason to cross him.
Right. Michael, I love it when you call because you make my job so easy. People say, you're doing such a great show, and it's like Michael doing all the work. I love it. Michael, do you have any more questions? I love your questions.
Well, do you have any? I'm just, I'm with you. I listened to your past weekend's show, Tricia,
mm-hmm.
and I'm with you completely. I'm so worried about what this is going to do to the country as a whole. We've got so far to go until the color of skin just really is not an issue, and
right.
it saddens and sickens me. We like to portray ourselves as being this moderate country and with advanced ideas and superior to all, and we are so far behind and lacking in so many ways. I just find it really disturbing. I wish there was some way to knock it off, but I don't think we can.
That's a great term. Just knock it off, people. Good Lord. Michael. It
shouldn't matter, but anyway, thank you. I'll enjoy listening to the rest of your show, and
thank you,
Cheryl, for your perspective. I appreciate everything.
And
thank
hopefully,
you so much.
Thank you, Michael. You are such a sweetheart. And hopefully, Cheryl, I haven't asked you this, and I should ask you off the air. That would be the professional thing to do, but this is much more fun to put you on the spot and make you squirm.
Okay.
I would like to do just a quick show every night that there is a day of testimony. Would that be okay with you?
Absolutely.
We can do it any time.
I'm not
we can
on the
do it
spot
anytime.
At all. Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I have no life, so it's easy for me to do. So if you, we'll just work around your schedule. Okay.
Okay.
Let's see. Let me just check in the chat room really quickly. We do have chat room is really picking
but
up
can
here.
Can I just say something about that?
Oh yes, please do. Please do. Please go
I
ahead.
I think the more we talk, the less that you're going to see people going off the rails. Like with Rodney King, one of the major reasons when, you know, the police officers were found not guilty, people just lost their minds because they didn't see it coming.
Nobody
we talk every night, and we, but they should have. If they had watched the trial, they would have. Just like Casey Anthony, if you had really paid attention, you would have seen it. So I just think if we talk every night and we say, listen, here's the deal. I'm telling you, in 30-something years, I've never seen the victim's mother walk out of a courtroom in anything but tears,
mm-hmm.
whether the person went to prison or they didn't. She's still
right.
destroyed. So there's not going to be a party. There's nothing to celebrate. There's just not. And if
mm-hmm.
we realize, okay, let's just talk every night and let's hear what the facts were, the true occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
What did the police do? What did they not do? Why didn't they do it? You
right.
know, I think it'll start to say, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not as mad at them as I once was told to be.
Right.
So now you don't hate the police. And then you're going to find some things out about George where you go, okay, maybe I pity him a little. And then maybe I kind of see that this guy, he wasn't playing a cop. He was petrified.
Mm-hmm.
He put a gun on to go to the store. I mean, just a regular nothing of an errand. And he felt
mm-hmm.
like he needed it. Well, I know a lot of people that major in criminal justice, not because they want to be a police officer. So that doesn't make him a wannabe, you know.
Gotcha.
He had
right.
neighbors
Understood.
That voted him into that position. Neighbors
mm-hmm.
that said, yes, we trust him. He knows the neighborhood. He wants to keep us safe. He'll go through the training, which, again, was offered by the police department. So
mm-hmm.
it's going to be interesting to see if they bring out what was told, what was said, what were you trained to do and not do.
And I think I would hope the defense would bring that out because I would think that would strengthen George's case for him. Because I'll tell you what, after today, Cheryl, George Zimmerman's going to need 30 or 40 Hail Marys here after that opening statement.
Oh, he's
going
to need to get his appeals ready.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. He's got to get his appeals ready. Well, okay, I'll tell you what, Cheryl. What we'll do is we'll come back tomorrow night. I'll talk with you to make sure what time is good for you. And then I'll put it up on Twitter. I'll put it up on Web Sleuths. But every night we'll just kind of go through what the day had for us, what we thought. And hopefully as we keep doing this more and more people will join us and we'll get the conversation lively, as they say. Oh, I think
it.
We have one more question. Let's see here. Let me just double check here. No more questions. Okay, I think that's it. We didn't have a whole lot to go over today because it was kind of, just one witness, but the knock-knock joke, that will go down in history. That really, truly
will. It
will
indeed. Yep.
So, Cheryl, we will talk to you tomorrow night, and everybody, thank you for joining me. I do have to say this, that, are you ready? If I can find, I'm not prepared. If I can find, here we go. It's the legal goo, people. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com LLC and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get upset at what we say, you can't blame the forums. You just come, talk to me, Trisha, and we'll do our best to get it all straightened out. Like Cheryl says, we need to talk a lot more, and boy, do I agree with that. Cheryl McCollum, thank you so much for your time. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Trisha. Thank you.